Greetings in the light of the most radiant one. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is Againstness, the Cult of Ego. You know, we are the entrance point of the solution that is designed by Source to end conflict in our world and beginning with our individual lives. Anyone who has taken any form of 12-step program recognizes that to find a solution requires admitting and recognizing the problem. And it's interesting to note that almost any time a person is heavily under an addictive influence or a mental aberration, there is almost categorically a denial by that person that there's any problem. I have spent literally my entire lifetime working in the field of awakening consciousness to their inherent divinity. And yet I find that because often we don't recognize that we're acting out of a false perception of self, we're not really getting the fact of our inherent divinity. The very problem exists in, an interpretation that we have placed on our experiential day-to-day interactions. And primarily, we have acted out of a sense that there is another existence apart from us over which we have no power and no authority. That very perception of the self is what is termed the ego, or the false self, or the limited self, or the mini-me. So both the ego's domain and its armor is its resistance to the fact of eternal love. That very resistance that rises up within us and outpictures as anger and vindictiveness and all of the negative states of consciousness is simply that one factor of resistance to eternal love. We are made in the image and likeness of eternal love. That is our nature. That is our mission. That is our duty. As we awaken and become enlightened, that is the only thing that remains, and all of the separate definitions of self melt away. Today we have, everywhere you look, there's a war against something. War against drugs, war against corruption, war against crime, war against terrorism, and on and on and on. And yet, the truth is that whenever you fight against anything or anyone, that ensures that that endeavor will fail. Why? Because it's against life. To fight against anything is to enter into resistance. And we all know that old phrase, what you resist persists. So when you fight against something, that old ego momentum will shapeshift into another appearance and manifest as a variation of that same theme of againstness. You know, when I was a child, I really disliked history for the simple reason that it was just story after story of the same old thing of fighting and conquering and killing and taking over, you know, people's lands or people's cities and citadels and possessions and peoples and enslaving them. And yet, every single one of us has been enslaved by this false interpretation that we call the ego or the cult of the ego. I would position us tonight in the possibility of accepting the fact that we're all in that cult. At some level, all of us have participated in creating and perpetrating and enforcing this cult of the ego. I wonder if very many of us have really taken the time to distinguish between thought and awareness, or thinking and simply being the observer. Is it possible to be in that dual perception of life so that you're participating and yet you're somewhat the observer of the participant? That dual state of consciousness has often been called a stage of soul integration or that awakening process. Now, if we are the chosen vehicles through which the conflicts in the world are going to find resolution, it has to begin with our own ending of conflict within ourselves. Any of you who would like to read a philosopher who has dedicated his life to choiceless awareness and the ending of conflict, you might want to check out Jiddu Krishnamurti. His life and his teachings, his books, his philosophy and perspective were based upon that divine observer behind the participator in the world. And I often used to read Krishnamurti, or in the early days, I used to go and sit and listen to his talks in Ojai, the Oak Grove. And he had a wonderful way of showing the difference between awareness and the thinker. And so let's again take a deep breath and think beneath the turbulence of your thoughts. And just be aware fully of yourself sitting wherever you are. Experience the energy, the atoms coursing as prana, as life force through your body. Experience the sensations of your physical body. Be aware of the sounds. But don't think, just be aware. In fact, that's a very good spiritual exercise, is to just sit down and in your mental imagination create a large basket and begin to identify as many sounds as you possibly can, and each one just drop it into that basket of awareness and let it go. Don't try to figure it out or discern the source of it. Just be aware of the sounds. You can do that same thing with sensations. But both of those exercises will bring you into the state of awareness. In the Buddhist tradition, this is called Vipassana meditation. And it's a very, very excellent way to train your consciousness to just be aware of that which is. You know, it's said that enlightenment, the very essence of it, is simply non-resistance, non-judgment, and non-attachment. You know, the ego gains its sense of safety by intellectually placing a label upon a person, situation, circumstance. And once it labels it, it feels like it can then dismiss it from any further examination. And in that, it fools itself, as if an illusion could fool itself. the ego is not who you are, but it is the fictitious persona that has become the veil between clearly seeing that which is and projecting a false interpretation on life, which then you feel perfectly justified in defending. Let's take an example. A fact is that the Hubble telescope has revealed that there are craters on the moon. End of fact. Now the ego gets a hold of that and all of a sudden thinks, ah, well, if there's craters, there must be asteroids. If there's asteroids that have hit the moon, then maybe they will hit Earth. If they hit Earth, then they may cause a polar flip, and then I'll die. So then somebody becomes the advocate for Sky Watchers Incorporated or whatever, and their job then is to devise some form of defense against this potential disaster which may happen based on statistics or the appearance of the moon. So all of a sudden, there's this outside force that must be defended against because it may destroy us. And of course, this is all that the ego is about, is survival. The whole consciousness of lack and neediness and insufficiency and insecurity and the need to defend and to protect form comes out of the false self or ego. What is there that needs defense when you know that you are eternal consciousness? You are eternal love. You are always I am that I am. Always and forever. Nothing can destroy you. The Bhagavad Gita has a beautiful way of going into that, that Atman is that which is never born. It never dies. Water cannot wet it. Fire cannot burn it. Nothing can destroy who you are. So that which is the very face of fear itself, false evidence appearing real, is another name for ego. So what happens when you find a world suffering under a collective delusion and misidentification of self? Well, we see it out pictured every single day on the evening news. And the ego is kept engaged in constantly devising new approaches to make sure that we never find the answer to the problem. That sounds crazy, but it's a crazy mindset. And it has produced a crazy world. You know, the face, only the face changes. But the enemy is always the perception of another as a threat to the self. Again, I like to go back to Sai Baba's definition of an angry person. Being like a dog barking at its own reflection in the mirror. The world you see is the world that you want to see based on what you want to have real. The Course of Miracles says that our thoughts and only our thoughts have given all the meaning that the world has for us. That only our interpretation has given the meaning that anything has for us. You know, when my husband and I bought a large piece of property and we inherited a whole garage full of antiques, the first thing I wanted to do was get rid of them all because they were just a pile of somebody else's old karma and junk in my perception. And I saw no value in them at all. And yet people, they absolutely fell over themselves when we put an ad in the paper that we had a garage full of very old antiques. People found value in these old things. Why? It's totally beyond me. They had no value to me. So what is it that makes a person put value on, you know, something, and to someone else it's just junk? Only the label that we, out of our mental body, out of our egos, have placed, that this is valuable and that's not valuable. There's a very endearing story about Hanuman, one of the Hindu deities. And Sita, the wife of Lord Rama, gave Hanuman a very beautiful diamond necklace. But Hanuman only cared for God. He didn't have any interest in diamonds. So he took the diamond necklace and he tore it apart and he bit into each of the diamonds, and then he threw it away in disgust. He said, "Why did you give me such a worthless thing? I've looked and looked. I can't find God in any of those diamonds." So again, you know, perception as beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But if your eye is single, your whole body will be filled with light. When all of your distractions, all of the energy currents of your consciousness are brought up through the chakras and focused in the third eye, that is, you're living in Christ, in the Christ consciousness, you're up and out of identifications with lesser states of consciousness, as represented by each of the chakras, your whole body becomes illumined. That Christ consciousness center, or third eye focus, is another way of saying that single eye. It's also another way of saying being centered in the truth of who you are. Looked at in another way, I'm going to be reading this small passage from the text of A Course in Miracles. It's on page 54, and it's entitled Love Without Conflict. And this is Jesus speaking. "It is hard to understand that the kingdom of heaven is within you and what that really means. This is because it's not understandable to the ego, which interprets it as if it were something, as if something outside were inside, and this does not have any meaning. The word within is unnecessary. The kingdom of heaven is you. What else but you did the Creator create? And what else but you is His kingdom? This is the whole message, which in its totality transcends the sum of its parts." So it's interesting that we are the kingdom of heaven, or the fifth dimension, or the kingdom of soul, or Sach Khand, the land of truth, or the ascended state. People are waiting to ascend. They're waiting for the kingdom of heaven to come. And that waiting is part of the ego's distancing of againstness. Because in that process, 9 times out of 10, people are against something in their life that is present. How is that? Well, people often judge certain behaviors as being unspiritual, or certain food items that you don't eat because that's not spiritual, or certain people you don't associate with because they're not enlightened. And so the cult of againstness, again, positions that so-called spiritual person, i.e. you, against a world or a set of people or a set of ideologies that is then seen as separate. How can we merge with unadulterated unification and oneness with love if we're constantly putting againstness between us and that joining? So this is the collective dweller on the threshold that every one of us is confronted with. And to return to the source of all that is in consciousness, we are all going to have to face that dweller at some point, that shadow self. We're all going to have to slay that dragon that we have projected as the arch enemy. Now, the ego consists, as I have mentioned in our previous show, about the dogmas and doctrines, belief systems and thoughts, and the mental and emotional baggage and conditioning, the pain body, the past grievances, all of that, everything that's not wholly joyous is part of the ego. Everything that is not of peace is part of the ego. Everything that does not leave you completely whole in your understanding of self is part of the ego. So in that, we simply move to the observer, because the minute you see and catch the ego at work, the minute somebody pushes one of your knee-jerk reactions, one of your trigger mechanisms, and you feel that energy of righteous indignation begin to come up inside you, which immediately begins to disturb the mind, immediately begins to engage the astral body. The minute you feel that energy coming up, if you can train yourself not to do anything but to watch it, watch it. Watch how the jaw will tighten, and often the hands too. Watch how the stomach will tighten. Watch how immediately you'll feel discomfort in the solar plexus and in the heart. Watch how immediately it starts to cloud the perception. And that is that sense of resistance to eternal love that we call the false self or the ego. Now, if you can stay calm and just watch it, the light of your observation will cause it to dissipate. Enlightenment is simply that, no more and no less. How simple can that be? But the ego often believes that it will gain by defending its rightness. In fact, the surest sign of an ego is the sense that I'm right and you're wrong. In fact, it's interesting, all religions that were created out of the separated self that we call the ego, and I would say almost all religions were created out of that, almost every single one of those religious doctrines is based on a turn or burn platform. In other words, there are the evildoers, and they're all going to roast in hell, and then there's the good people, that's usually the one the ego identifies with, and they're going to heaven. Why we would ever rejoice at going someplace at the expense of anyone else has always, just from the time I was in Catholic boarding school, that has gotten me. I've always wondered, how can anybody have joy at the thought that anyone would burn in eternal hell? And yet that thought form, spawned of the very ego, has been the basis of so much persecution and injustice and torture and misery worldwide. And it's been prevalent in every single doctrinal religious institution, every political regime, every ideological label that an ego wants to hold between itself and eternal oneness and love has that element in it, where some win at the expense of many others. So the very concept of sin, hell, death, and damnation is the creation of the ego. And all religions that foster those thought forms are cults. A cult is a belief system that isolates, defends itself and sees everything outside of itself as the enemy, as the great Satan, as the wicked ones, the evildoers, whatever, and feels perfectly justified in doing whatever it's necessary, even to the point of killing another, to protect its cultish status. So let's own it. This is something that humans caught up in the ego do. And let's address it at the only place that a solution can be found. And that's beginning personally and individually with our own life. Begin to identify areas that you have judged in yourself and in others, which is really the same thing. The mirror and the thing that you dislike the most, that you carp and complain about the most, is the very thing that your ego doesn't want you to recognize in yourself. But since we live in a reflective world, the very thing that you dislike the most in the world is the very area you need to look at in yourself, because that is what needs the healing. The healing being the simple recognition that only God, only love, only absolute perfection is real. Everything else is going to fall away. So as you keep your consciousness single and behold only the face of Christ, only the Beloved. In fact, a really good definition of forgiveness is to simply overlook the illusion of the outer ego behavior to the child of God, the incarnation of God, behind that ego, behind that behavior. Hold your eyes single to that. The ego likes to get involved in other people's egos because there is that power of joining. Everything finds a like affinity with a similar vibration. So when you go out into the world with a chip on your shoulder and an ego's agenda, you attract other people that are in that same mindset, that same frequency. When you're angry and you're walking the street like a member of a gang or somebody and you're looking for a fight, you'll attract that adversarial gang that will come out of the woodwork and take you on. So the ego is always vigilant to protect its turf. Its turf of belief systems, its turf of religiosity, its turf of political or ideological or cultural interpretation. It's always territorial. I found in traveling on the inner planes that same thing prevails in terms of spirits and principalities and rulers and demigods. They've all got their turf on the inner realms. They've all got their favorite little ideologies that they spawn. And when you come into an agreement with a particular belief system in the physical plane, you'll have all those particular spirits and entities that are part of the religious spirits that hold that together, or political spirits, or ideological spirits, or coven spirits, or whatever. There will be spirits that will enforce that belief system. They'll come to you in the dream state. They'll come to you in vision. They'll appear to you in astral apparitions. And so that's why it's so important that you maintain your own sense of who and what you're about, and you don't buy into other people's doctrinal belief systems. The minute you put yourself under the slavedom of another person's reality, you have forfeited the divine aid that would illumine you. You have come under another's karmic field, another's shadow, another's influence. This is how these despotic political leaders get into power and maintain power for years and years and years and suppress whole nations. This is how a religion can suppress the truth for centuries, because we allow these ego-driven, egocentric individuals to be the voice that belongs only to the inner master within our heart, we will allow that outer voice to become the authority and to take the place of our own conscious choice and conscious awareness. It's interesting, isn't it? Why in the world do we do that? It's because the ego has totally convinced the consciousness that by itself it doesn't know that there's somebody or something that has a greater knowledge, a greater authority, and that therefore you can't trust yourself and your own heart. You have to believe in a book or a person or a prophet or a leader or a dictator or a something. God forbid that you should trust your own inner knowing. So trusting your own inner knowing is the beginning of your freedom. It is the beginning of your stepping free of the cult of ego. The Bhagavad Gita has a beautiful way, again, of phrasing that. Krishna speaking, better your own dharma, your own work done imperfectly, than doing the work of another perfectly. In other words, better your own truth, even if it causes you to stumble and make some mistakes, than following the doctrine of another person perfectly. You don't get any brownie points for following an outer form or an outer ideology or an outer belief system. As a matter of fact, the definition of that is idolatry. Idolatry is when you worship anything and put that between you and your own inner master, the Holy Spirit that dwells within you as the Spirit of truth and guidance, the intuitor, the intuition, which means to be taught from within. We have made a cult, for example, around religious scriptures. Many churches teach you that that is the Word of God, forgetting that there was no such thing back in the times of Abraham and the early prophets. There was no such thing as a New Testament until many, many centuries after Jesus had already been crucified, died, and resurrected, and returned to the higher realms. And yet, that all of a sudden is the Word of God. And, moreover, people feel like if they study or explore anything of an esoteric nature that isn't addressed specifically in the Bible, they're entering into the domain of Satan, and they risk eternal damnation. Oh my gosh, what a control system. You know, Doug and Don, that founded this wonderful BBS radio station, wrote a wonderful book that I downloaded and read, and you can too. It's called From Bible to Self-Realization. And they go into some of this. But it's something that we have to realize is that every single form that we create and point our finger to and say, ah, that is God, that is doomed to failure. It's got to disappoint us. Because if we could ever find truth between the covers of a book, we would stop there, and all progression and expansion of awareness would cease and end. And that is why we have to go beyond. We have to go beyond every single form that is against someone or something else. I have often, in fact, I repeatedly do this. I will enter into a belief system and completely isolate my mind into that belief system until I can see through that lens of consciousness. Once I have seen through it, and often I have to get totally lost in the belief system before I can come into that point of awakening within it, then all of a sudden I can understand how people get caught in these labyrinths of consciousness. And part of my mission is to, if you will, go into them and awaken within them to begin to lessen the power of that illusion field. Many of you do that as well. I believe that it is the mission of many of us And it's not something that you take on consciously. It's something you find yourself doing because that's the imprint of your spirit. But if that is your mission, don't allow people to, as they have through my whole life, very often misunderstood my behavior. They would try to say, oh, well, you know, she's gotten caught up in this or she's gotten caught up in that, and she's seeking for this or seeking for that. And I've often said, I'm not seeking for God. I'm seeking for God. And many of you are too, because as you awaken, you become a light shining upon the way so that others can find the path more clearly. And that is a duty I believe that every single light bearer that's truly a light bearer is doing. Just like that beautiful tarot card where you see the hermit standing on the mountaintop and he's got a lantern. Obviously, he's on the mountaintop. He's not trying to find the way up to the mountaintop. But having come to the mountaintop, he's holding that lantern steady so that those coming up the mountaintop can find their way more easily. So each of you, and the beautiful metaphor in the Bible is that we're a city, a lighted city on the hill. So the metaphor is shine your light so that others can find their way. And be a way shower so that you don't lead others, but you have made a clear enough path through the jungle that people can then follow in that way if they so choose, or they can bushwhack a new way. But each of us becomes a way that others may achieve. Each of us becomes a way that enables others to stand more clearly in truth. Each of us becomes a source of strength, enabling others to stand. And so in that, we become a beam of light shining upon the way. And that is the path of true discipleship, or truly walking in the light of an illumining consciousness. Bear in mind that there will always be more. There is the eternal plus factor in spirit. That's how it differs also from the ego's belief systems. The ego's belief systems always have a beginning and an end. They always have a point at which they don't go any further. They're always closed systems. They're always cul-de-sacs. They always close in and just simply replicate themselves in a similar but slightly different form. So as you begin to trust the light of your own perception, your own understanding, your own awareness, the light of what you have found keeps you centered, empowered, joyful, and conflict-free. Walk in that light, because that is the way to truth. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he was not talking out of his body, his personality, or his ego. He was talking out of his I am presence, out of that monad, that Atman. And yet the whole church has revolved around placing all of its focus on the outer form of Jesus, the outer ego manifestation of the church. And I call it an ego manifestation because it separates rather than unifies. In most cases, not every case, but in most cases. And if you don't, what's the point of having a church? Because a church usually is a fence placed around a belief system to keep it intact so people can go into that particular arena of belief and perspective. But at some point, you transcend all of that. It's just like a little tree, a little sapling is going to need a fence around it so that the goats and the other things don't come and knock it over and trample it and chew it up. But once that tree begins to get strong, then you take the fence away and the goats will come and they'll graze around the foot of the tree and they'll eat the fruit. But the tree is strong enough to survive that then. And your life is like that too. When you're very, very young and unformed in your incarnation, in your integration of your divine self and your higher principles, you may need that fence of belief system around you until you can kind of get a sense of what you're all about. But once you're firmly rooted in who you truly are, then you become a source of fruit and shade and strength and succor and nourishment to all those around you. And that, I believe, is what we're called to do. Get out of the closet. Get out of those confined areas. Open the mind. Let in the light of the higher consciousness. And walk in that divine authority that only comes from knowing who you are and walking in that freedom. Spiritual life is a life of increasing freedom. We search for freedom in every place but where it can be found. It can only be found in full acceptance of who and what you are, minute by minute, day by day, without resistance, without judging, and without attaching, just to allow life to flow through you and experience to flow through you. And all of that, just let it go through you, but not find any way to stick in your energy field. You know, we've all really enjoyed learning the law of attraction through that very, very wonderful book and film called The Secret. And the bottom line of The Secret is that in order for us to manifest anything, we need to become identical to the feeling of already having it. We become the vibration of having it already to cause it to manifest in the outer world. So because we create out of similarity of vibration, we realize on some level that we become peace and attract peace, or we become war and attract more conflict. And just recently, and I hope those of you at least listening to this show don't buy into this, but just recently on the internet, all of a sudden we're starting to get this dialogue about the potential of going into food rationing. The ego, beloved, will always be perceiving a threat in terms of scarcity and lack. And again, this makes no sense to me at all, but already they're saying you've got to store food and hoard food and don't tell your neighbors that you buried it in a garbage can in the backyard and, put on extra locks on your door because maybe your neighbor will come knocking on your door for food. I mean, this is the total agenda of the ego, is to survive at the cost of anyone and everything else if need be. Nobody, I don't think, really considers when they're in the ego state how illogical it is to survive if two-thirds of the world is going to perish. I mean, who would even want to but an ego? And it's doomed to perish anyway because it's unreal. And illusions eventually have, they come to an end. So the ego is fighting a losing battle because it is false evidence appearing real, and at some point the light of truth will cause it to vanish, collectively and individually, person by person. So please don't buy into these doom and gloom prognostications that there's going to be this and there's going to be that. Every time I see that, I always say, unless of course it isn't. I hereby cancel that. I affirm that God has not gone out of business, that abundance is always present, and that I'll have everything I need, always. And so begin to question the ego's agenda. Just don't swallow it hook, line, and sinker. Begin to really question We often question the truth, but how many of us really question the ego's agenda of not enough and the ego's agenda of trying to survive and perpetrate the survival of the forms, the very forms that have enslaved us, is what we're trying to protect. What we need to do is begin to think of our entire planet as our family. What would have happened instead of going and bombing the heck out of some of these countries? We had chosen to bring in a task force of mediators, of loving brothers and sisters that would go and knock on the doors of these different countries and say, looks like you need a little help here. What can we do to be of service to you? Can we assist with helping you get some more food or proper medical care? Can we build you a church or a mosque or a synagogue or a hospital? What can we do for you? You know, the group I'm familiar affiliated with, called the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness here in Los Angeles, we actually did that. We went and knocked on this country in Egypt. It's not country, village. And we said, what can we do to be of service to you folks? And they said, well, we would really like to have a mosque. We don't have any place to gather for worship. So we built them a mosque. And then we said, what can we do for you now? And they said, well, we don't have a school for our children. And so we built them a school. And then we asked what we can do for you then. And they showed us the hospital in Luxor, which was basically operating with very, very minimal equipment. So we adopted the hospital in Luxor and completely refurbished it with cast-off items, you know, that become so quickly obsolete here in the West. So many very, very wonderful medical equipment is available. If you just knock on a few doors and say, can we have, you know, the things that you're getting ready to discard, that you're getting ready to phase out and replace with more advanced equipment, can we have that? There's plenty of people that could use it. And so we were able to outfit the entire Luxor Hospital without really very little expenditure at all. And then the cruise line that goes up and down the Nile volunteered to actually take the cargo and deliver it to the hospital, which is just a short distance from the docking on the Nile in Luxor. So we're just a little tiny group here in Los Angeles, but that was something that we did. And likewise, if you look, there's all sorts of ways that we can knock on the door of our neighbor, and whether they're another nation or the person next door, and say, could you use a little bit of assistance here? We'd be very glad to shop for you or take you to the doctor or help you out. What can we do for you? If we could develop that attitude towards those so-called people that we are against now, we would find a loving brother and sister instead of terrorists. We would find countries that would willingly join with us in growing food and finding free sources of energy and doing all sorts of things if we didn't have to spend all of our time and focus and money in trying to defend from one another and create distance instead of joining. So I'm suggesting again that we are the solution, that we are the return of Christ, we are the collective Messiah, we are the kingdom of heaven that's come, we are the instruments that will be used to transform our world. That is what it means to be a light worker, a light bearer. That is what it means to wake up, is to realize it's not all about me and mine and taking care of my own 10 acres. It's really about being my brother's keeper and doing everything that I can to be of service to even the least of these, knowing that in serving the least of these, I have served the Christ or the Lord. And that is basically what I'd like us to really look at tonight, is how we can make a difference in the world in which we live, to engage in our society, in our community, in our city, in our area, in an area where light is needed, where clarity is needed, where a helping hand is needed. people are always asking me, well, what's my mission? What's my mission? And your mission, beloved, is the need that's right in front of you. It's the need in your family. It's the need in your child. It's the need in your neighbor. It's the need in your spouse. It's the need in yourself. Anytime you feel that you're not enough, beloved, you are not seeing yourself. There is nothing your holiness cannot do. There is nothing that the power that dwells in you as you cannot accomplish. That is the absolute truth. And to identify with anything lesser than that is to simply be caught up in the cult of the ego. So find those areas that you have an againstness. Do you have an issue with people's gender preference? Look at that. That's the againstness that you need to heal. Do you have an againstness against a particular ideology, a particular culture, a particular type of person, a particular color of skin, a particular political affiliation? Get over it. That is the ego. Get out of the cult of the ego and begin to move into that eternal love that is your only true identity. Enter into the one life that we all share. Enter into the one love that we all embody. And lovingly look past the little petty ego. Look past it. Because that behavior that comes out of the ego is a prayer for healing and love. So just love and be a source of that healing, and you will be a light in this world. Tonight we will meditate on the one life, the one breath, the one heart, the one purpose that we all have, no matter who we are or what we are. Our one purpose is to truly be the self, the I am that I am. And as we go out and we chant the lovely hue, let's just see it as a love song of the one to the one. Take a deep breath. You. You, it is you. It is that heavenly and universal one. God bless you, and God willing, I will be on the air next week.